always hire based on the company values. And always remember that finding a person who fits you skills-wise, it's not everything. Because you might have a really great expert who's going to be committed short-term because, you know, the values don't match. So identify your company values, really live by them, and hire by them.
We're on a mission. We're going to find and uncover the smartest, most successful entrepreneurs on the planet, explore their highs, their lows, and how they ultimately mastered the game. I'm Martin Cook, and I'm excited to welcome you to the Smarter Destiny podcast. I'm grateful for you and your time. Now let's level up together. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another Smarter Destiny podcast, where this time we have my friend Erica Zegida on the show. Erica is the founder of Prezana, theprezana.com. She helps small startups, agencies, and e-commerce brands build operations, teams, put out fires, all the kind of stuff that happens with particularly fast-growing young teams, young businesses, the sort of things which we might sort of put under the umbrella of operations if we were sort of overgeneralizing, but really it's the kind of stuff that makes the actual business, and in particular the people in the business, not the founder, work best and get things done in the most efficient and strong, powerful, successful way, and so on. So Erica's clients, the founders of these businesses, typically have been stuck in the trap of working in the business and not on the business, but don't really know how to get out of that role. And this is where Erica, with her cape on, comes to the rescue, flies into the rescue, and sorts things out and puts those fires out permanently. So I think it's going to be a very exciting podcast today, because we all have these problems, right? Like, all of us have these problems in business, particularly when we grow and things begin to change and things that used to work no longer work. So I think without further ado, let's welcome her to the stage. Erica, how's it going?
Hi. Thank you for the intro. Actually, this intro sounded like I'm a superhero. So thanks for that. I'm doing great. Thank you. How about you?
I'm living the dream here as well, Erica. So whereabouts in the world are you right now?
I'm currently in Lithuania. In Vilnius, in the capital of Lithuania. I don't know if you've ever been here.
I think I have.
We have snow.
You have snow. Our snow in Britain doesn't come until later on. We just have cold at the moment. But it's fun because we had a lot of hot, right? But Lithuania, beautiful country. Okay, so the way we like to kick things off on this show, Erica, is we like to go back. We like to go back to a point in time which really serves as your beginnings of an entrepreneur, beginnings of being an entrepreneur, becoming an entrepreneur, where you discovered that whatever it was you were doing before probably wasn't your thing, it wasn't your calling. If you've got a time in mind, could you take us back to that time and tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, well, I think actually my journey began even before I realized it began. And I'm talking more about when I was still in school, thinking that, you know, oh, I want to do something cool with my life. And I didn't want to pursue what was considered to be a typical career for someone who has good grades, because that was me. You know, I had good grades. My career was like, you're going to become a doctor or a lawyer. And I was like, I don't want to do that. I want to do something else. So I feel like this is when I realized that I really want to do something. I just didn't know that it's entrepreneurship, because I didn't even know what that means at that time. So I actually went to live in Scotland. I studied there. I did neuroscience, by the way, which is like so unique, right? And actually after the uni, I realized it's not for me. So I was always pursuing entrepreneurship without clearly defining that it is what I want to do. And then when I got my first corporate job, I was like, okay, this is like too many restrictions for me. I need to be creative. I need to use, you know, my freedom. And that's actually when it hit me that, okay, I actually have to go into business. I just wanted always to create. And I think I'm considering myself a creator in a way.
Nice. And so what business did you go into at that point?
I actually went into a digital marketing agency. And that's basically, we co-founded the agency, four of us. And that's when it all started. And then, yeah, from there, I just took off to where I am right now.
Beautiful. Okay. So you sort of learned the ropes there in that digital agency. And, you know, it's worth checking out the Prezana.com, guys listening, because it's a really nice looking site. It's clear that thought and attention has gone into the branding, the style, and the messaging. So clearly, we're beginning to learn where the beginnings of those skills came from for you. So at what point did you start having early conversations with founders in trouble, shall we say? Founders that need what you're doing? Where did you discover that actually you're really good at what it is that you do?
Yeah, well, maybe I'm now thinking that it wasn't intentional. Like, I wasn't putting myself out there. They started coming to me because of, actually worked in a company called Sugatan. You probably know that company, the agency, yeah, right?
Been on the show.
And yeah. And they have a great marketing, right? That, like, the branding of the company was great. And since I was one of the key persons in the team, people start coming to me for advice. And that's when I was like, okay, so there's a need, right? So it's a good sign. So why not to actually create a brand and do some consulting on a side? And that side business eventually became what I do every day, full time.
Brilliant. So you were working alongside Devidas and Chris? And
yes.
That, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yep.
Nice.
I was one of those four people.
Ah, there you go. Like you said off air, it's a small world in the e-commerce game, and yep. and there we go. It proves it once again. So you were behind there practicing it, doing, you know, honing in your craft, and this side hustle became this big thing. Okay, so we, and I'm saying we and all of the listeners, right? The massive we here. We relate to issues. We relate to challenges in the business. We relate to sometimes having members of staff. It feels like herding cats, or maybe when you're growing, it feels like things are breaking, and it's just, I always refer to it as like spinning plates kind of thing. And you just got to try and make sure that the plates made of glass keep spinning, and the plates that are made out of rubber, it's okay if they drop, because some plate is going to drop. You just got to prioritize which ones drop. But I imagine that you would be more of the philosophy like, no plates need to drop, not if there's processes for keeping them spinning. Could you tell us give us a typical conversation where a founder comes to you with a complaint, and then how you would work like with that founder, or how you sort of got started in helping them?
Yeah, well, it's very hard to say, you know, what problem they would come with. Typically it starts with, we need your help. And I'm like, where do you need your help? Like, what is the biggest problem? And they're like, everything is a problem. Everything is burning, or everything is on fire. So it's really hard to say what is the typical problem. It's usually, you know, something to do with the team, that they feel like the team is not autonomous enough, or it's to do with the processes. But often than not, the problem is not just processes and team. Often the problem is actually also in the culture and the management and leadership. So how we usually start is, you know, we have this intro, let's say, we talk about the problems, we try to understand them, and then I always recommend to do an audit. And that audit really tells where the biggest issue lies. Is it in the processes and communication? Is it in goal setting and alignment? Is it to do with talent acquisition and development? Or is there like cultural things that need to be fixed? So we usually start with an audit, and then that audit shows what is the low-hanging fruits. And more often than not, it's to do with actually setting the company vision and mission, because, you know, I work with marketing agencies and e-commerce brands. Maybe with e-commerce, it's a little bit different, because usually, you know, there was a pain point maybe they wanted to address, so they created this product and they went to market. But with marketing agencies, it's usually they think that they are in the business because of the cash, because they always think that, you know, building a digital marketing agency is like a cash cow for your future e-commerce business. So, but yeah, often than not, the true reason is not that. It either lies in the founder, in like in a childhood, in the adulthood, like why they actually wanted to do entrepreneurship in the first place. So yeah, you often actually start with getting the basics right, and then we work on the processes, team, and stuff.
Okay, so why does it matter? Now, like, we all know why it matters, but like, why does it matter that a company has their mission and their values and their goals? Why is that important?
Because you really want to build a purpose-driven organization, because people are driven by that. You know, they are not, we often think people are in the business because of the money, like actual work for you, because, you know, the pay is good, they get benefits and all of that. But it's actually that people are looking for, they're looking for growth, the potential to grow. They're looking for purpose, and they're just overall looking for, you know, opportunities to express themselves. Like, these are the biggest motivators in a company, and how you can give the potential, how you can give purpose if the company itself doesn't have purpose. So you really need to get the basics right in order to keep your people motivated long term.
Beautiful, beautiful. Okay, so you've gone through this initial order, and you've identified some of the low-hanging fruit. what happens next? How do you, is it a bunch of training videos that you're throwing at them, or are you more hands-on, or like what does the next stage look like?
Yeah, I actually do consultations. There's like a consulting program that we have that already is like built. We just shuffle around the topics based on the need, customize slightly. So it's typically consultations, but also, you know, I'm on Slack. I'm also participating in like day-to-day overseeing how it's done. I kind of work as a mentor, co-chair, and also like someone who oversees that everything is getting done. So yeah, it's a mix. It's not like pre-recorded videos. But I'm launching my course, so it's getting there.
Launching your course, it's okay. Okay, so we like to make these podcasts super actionable for the audience mm-hmm. listening. So even without working with you, you know, we try and make sure that there's things that takeaways that they can begin to apply to their business straight away. Have you got like your top three things that you would recommend that you see time and time again being a problem? These are the solutions. Like, what things can our listeners apply in their business to make it run a little bit better, a little bit smoother now mm-hmm. that you recommend?
Well, okay, so I'm going to be very practical and then I'll go a bit less practical, which is also very important. So first of all, you know, if you are a company, let's say, remote or partially remote, I recommend you get the infrastructure right. So you get your, you know, you get all the right tools for communication, for workload management, for calls and all of that, like file storage and so on. So I recommend, first of all, get that right. And again, my recommendation is never, you know, you will always see that other companies use different tools. But I always say in every tool, there's an opportunity and you just have to stick to it and get the maximum out of it. And it doesn't really matter what tool you choose. So that's one thing. I recommend to actually set the infrastructure right for communication, workload management, processes, and so on. Another thing that I always recommend is invest a lot of time in developing empathy. Because often than not, people try to blame, like they always think it's a people problem or they think it's a process problem, but often than not, it's a communication problem. So really, I would recommend to invest time in developing empathy and really trying to understand, you know, how to interpret the actions of the people, try to understand, you know, what kind of people you have in the team. And actually, maybe that would be the third thing, invest time in understanding what people you have on the team. And that could be done, you know, with the strength assessments, for example. So that would be my recommendation. The infrastructure, the strengths assessments that you can do to understand the team, and also learning about leadership, empathy, and so on.
Nice. What strength assessments do you recommend? Is it like a Myers-Briggs type thing or a DISC, or like what do you recommend?
Again, you know, the choice is wide. You choose the ones that are, my recommendation is choose the ones that are backed by psychology. I use a lot Clifton assessment and DISC. So I use them as a combination because DISC really puts together the whole team in like one circle. And it gives like a very practical approach and understanding how the person works, what they like, what they don't like, what stresses them and so on. And the Clifton assessment is more about intrinsic strengths. So that's also very good. And I mean, you would be surprised how many things you learn about yourself after you do the Clifton, and that you see it like, you know, I always thought that like this is a weakness of mine, when in reality it's a strength and you just need to utilize it more. So a lot of things can become clear, but also, you know, as with any other assessment, you just have to spend time to understanding how to read it right. So it's not like, you know, I've done it, ticking off the mark and that's it. You actually have to spend time to analyze it. And that's something also that I recommend doing.
I highly agree. A number of years ago, we started across the organizations that I'm in some capacity, we started deploying Myers-Briggs. So in our case, it was 16personalities.com, mm-hmm. which is a free test initially, and you can pay for further detail. And it was somewhat of a game changer to us. And what we began to realize, even like the mastermind that we co-founded, DFN, like the members now in mm-hmm. Slack actually have their little Myers-Briggs four letters next to their name. And members will often choose who they want to like bounce ideas off of based on the strengths and weaknesses, and knowing that that person like looks at things, they might be more of a judging rather than a feeling kind of character, and you know, and so on.
Yeah.
And one of the things that certainly on my journey that I discovered sort of post-30s, probably quite late in the game, was how, yeah, people don't think how you think. People don't act how you act. And yeah, it's very easy to assume everyone's just thinking the same and then getting frustrated. Like, why don't you get this? You know, it's mm-hmm. easy. Or why do you think it's something else? Are you familiar with vivid vision at all?
Probably not. It sounds familiar, but I'm not sure if I know what that is.
That's fine. So we had Cameron Herold on the show, who's the sort of inventor of vivid vision. He's done like TEDx talks on it and so on, mm-hmm. or TED talks, or one of the other. And it's a way, and this is an exercise we did with Nubru, and it's a way of getting the vision of the company, but like getting it so crystal clear. It's like frameworks so that you can describe your vision for the company to a point where it's almost, when it's like read out, it's mm-hmm. almost like that you're just telling a story of what the company's like in 4 years, like what the employees are doing, what they're talking about, who, what they're excited about, where the business is operated, how it is, what a day-to-day, what a morning looks like and stuff. It's a really powerful mechanism. And so mm-hmm. like this stuff is so exciting to me, and to, you know, have you on the show talking about it is phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna check it out. But yeah, I just wanted to add something. Also, you know, when you do those personality assessments, I mean, as I said, one thing is to look at it and understand the other person, but the other thing is always come back to it. So for example, when the situation arises and you are really not understanding how the person is, like why he or she did this particular thing this certain way, I always recommend to go back to that assessment and try to first of all understand why the person is doing this. You know, is it because that's how they think, that's how they approach stuff? And really, this is also about what I mentioned as empathy. Understanding each member's strengths and weaknesses helps you build the empathy towards the team members. So yeah, and then as I said, you know, it's always good to come back. For example, if you have a one-on-one or performance review or something, always review again the person's strengths, weaknesses, understand, you know, how the person is functioning. And yeah, my recommendation is also try to utilize strengths. Don't try to eliminate weaknesses. Like, don't try to make the person work harder on their weaknesses. Rather, take that energy and help the person work on the strengths. And the weaknesses can be compensated by bringing in the new person, for example, on a team. So yeah, that's very important. Again, you know, as with anything else that you choose, you really have to be thinking about how to get the maximum out of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So in the introduction, I believe we also touched upon one of your strengths being recruitment, and it's one of the areas mm-hmm. that you help your clients with as well. Now, I obviously know some of the founders of some of your clients that you got on the website, and I know as well that increasingly with digital businesses, there's no longer necessarily a need for everybody to be in the same room, held the same country, yeah. right? Do you therefore, when helping founders with their recruitment, help them search worldwide? And if so, like what do you find is some of the sort of strengths and pitfalls of recruiting internationally?
I mean, I'm a huge advocate actually of international worldwide recruitment, because I like to say that the world is the pool of the talent. So you really need to go out there and look for the best talent. First of all, you know, the biggest pro here is that, you know, looking worldwide, you are actually giving yourself a higher chance of finding the best person that can fit in. The downside is that, you know, it might be the wrong time zone, which means that, you know, it might be tough to work with the person. But again, if you get your processes right, you can eliminate that as a downside quite easily. But yeah, I always recommend to hire internationally. That's what I'm doing. And, you know, I do hire sometimes locally, especially when they want like specific language speaking person and, you know, your choices are limited. But overall, you know, international hiring all the way, 100%.
And what are some of your go-to sites for that?
Oh, it's a tough one, because I do believe in headhunting, which means that you actually go out there and look for the person. I'm a huge fan of LinkedIn ads, but again, it depends on what position you're hiring. You know, maybe hiring a media buyer, LinkedIn is not the best option. But overall, LinkedIn ads, job ads is a great way to do it. Like, I mean, spending, let's say 100 euros or 80 euros, you can get like 200 applicants easily. So LinkedIn is a great place. Facebook is a great place. Upwork. I mean, there are so many websites that are like specific for positions, like Behance for graphic designers and so on. So really, it depends. But I would say LinkedIn is a great place. Headhunting for sure is all the way to go. Yeah, Facebook is a great place. It depends again on the industry. So you have to be careful about that.
Amazing. So once again, it's not a one size fits all, and you've got all of your places. And then I imagine you help the founders actually go through the interview process, right? And filter out the best candidates and then get them onboarded and part of the team and culture.
Typically the recruitment process is, you know, we go out there, we look for the talent, we send them the test. I mean, I'm a huge believer in asking the right questions and not asking for a CV, because I mean, CVs are always a bit fabricated in my opinion. And you know, you being a waiter, let's say, you put yourself as you were the restaurant manager. So really CVs are, you know, something that you have to be very conscious about when reading. So we put out a test, not a test, a questionnaire that we ask to fill out. So we shortlist the candidates, we go on a first interviews, because you know, by that time we already know what the company culture is, so we can qualify the candidates based on that. And then the second interview, we guide the founders how to do that, but you know, they still have to participate. So it's basically it's their choice, but at that time it's like three people that they interview.
Beautiful. Yeah. And do you typically sit on those interviews?
The second interview is not, because you know, you already participate in the first one. I mean, we record everything, we store all the information, we store notes and everything else that can be useful for the founder, but we do instruct them how to run that interview, like what things to ask. As I mentioned at the beginning in the intro, I'm a huge advocate of Asana, and we have like agendas prepared, like interview agendas prepared that we recommend founders to follow.
Amazing. So Asana being the project management tool for those out there not 100% sure. So what's the link between Prosana and Asana? is that a coincidence?
I would say, now I'm thinking how to answer this. There is a connection for sure, because Asana is like one of the main tools that I use. But Prosana kind of sounded cool, and I was like, that's a nice name. Let's go with it.
Plus, it's later on in the internet where you're unlikely to get like the COOwizard.com or something anymore. Like, we have to create our new names. I mean, you know, Nubrew, for example, our brand. Like, you have to make up words nowadays, guys. It's just the game that we're playing right now.
Exactly. It's a tough game. It's a real estate game right now.
So can I push you for one more little nugget that, so earlier on we touched upon a couple, one more little nugget that founders can take and begin to apply in their business now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one more nugget. Should I choose what area to cover?
Yeah, your choice.
Okay. So I think the other thing that I would recommend, I mean, first of all, I would always recommend to use Asana. It's a great place. But really, you know, try to think outside the box, especially when creating processes. I don't recommend the written procedures, you know, the old style SOPs, stands for standard operating procedures. I recommend to think of the ways how you can build the processes, the workflows that you can reuse multiple times. And it's not about, you know, going on to Drive, trying to find that document to understand what you have to do. So try to think about how to put it in a way. And I use Asana for that, so that you can, you know, the next time you have to do something, all you have to do is just execute on Asana project, for example. And that's how I mentioned the meeting agenda, for example, for the second interview. It just works. It works well. And I just always recommend to think outside the box a bit here.
Brilliant. Okay, so where can those listening who are, you know, excited and like, damn, this is what I need in my business, where can they go to learn more about you and get in touch?
So one place to do that is to go to the website. So theprosana.com. Also, you can guys find me on LinkedIn, Facebook. I mean, I'm available there too. I'm also quite active on LinkedIn. So you can definitely, if you follow me, you can also get a lot of nuggets from me, because I'm sharing content constantly. But really feel free to get in touch. And I'm always open to having like intro calls and just, you know, giving free advices too.
Beautiful. All right. So at this point in the show, we like to mix things up. We go into the rapid fire question round. I ask the questions quickly. You can choose the speed in which you respond. Are you up for that?
Let's do it.
Are you two thumbs up for that?
Yes.
There we go. Boom. All right. Question one. If you ever had to start again, how would you make your money?
How would I? Well, first of all, I would start by reading more. That's one thing that I would do. I would spend a lot of time reading, and I'm pretty sure out of that reading, an idea would come up. So my recommendation is just start with reading.
Start with reading. Nice. Mm-hmm. How do you hire top talent? Now, we touched upon it a little bit in the the interview, but here's your opportunity to fill in any gaps that may have been missed, if you like.
Yes. One thing that I wanted to add is always hire based on the company values. And always remember that finding a person who fits you skills-wise, it's not everything. Because you might have a really great expert who's going to be committed short-term because, you know, the values don't match. So identify your company values, really live by them, and hire by them. That's my recommendation. You know, soft skills are, I would say, even more important than hard skills, because people can learn, you know, how to program, or they can learn how to Photoshop or anything else, but you can hardly change the personality or the strengths, and also hire based on strengths. Identify who you have on the team, and just add in anything that's missing.
Beautiful. How do you identify a good business partner?
Okay. Strengths, weaknesses, 100%. Identify what you're good at. There's a guy, an author actually, and he's a business owner too, a consultant called Patrick Lencioni. I don't know if you ever heard of him. So he has a company called The Table Group, and he's talking a lot about working genius. So really identify what is your working genius, and that could be just, you know, your strengths, and complement your weaknesses with the person who has a different working genius or who has different strengths. And again, you know, the core values also have to match. It's like any relationship. So you have to be on the same page when it comes to, let's say, family, or at least have a good understanding and empathy towards that. The values about, like, a good vision for the company, so you're on the same page. It's a complex thing. It's like a relationship, really. And you have to invest in that.
What is one of your proudest moments?
One of my proudest moments? Oh, that's such a tough question, really. I mean, every day is my proudest moment, because I'm getting up, I'm continuing doing what I love, and I just go with it, really. I wouldn't be able to specify one specific moment.
No, you're going to cop out. You're not going to bring up one thing where you're like, actually, that was pretty cool. I mean, starting for yourself, right? You must have had some pretty good accomplishments with clients.
Of course, I did have. I mean, I'm always probably realizing that it was a very proud moment when it's too late. Like, when I look back, I'm like, oh, so this was a good moment. I mean, I'm proud to say that, for example, Sugatan Agency, which we co-founded, grew to 80 people at that time when I left. And 80 people was like fully international, 100% remote. I mean, it's a proud moment, you know, bringing all those people together in one room, and then a lot of relationships then developed from agency. I mean, personal and professional. So it's just amazing, you know, to see how you can help connect people. So it's a proud moment for sure.
There you go. Definitely. That wasn't so hard.
You got it. Yeah.
What's one interesting fact about you that not many people would know?
Well, first of all, I think the most interesting fact is that I'm a neuroscientist, and I'm doing a completely different thing in my life, which is not neuroscience related. So that's one interesting fact. I also have weird hobbies too. Like, people don't understand how they are related. So yeah.
What's one weird hobby?
I mean, I have a hobby, like I'm horse riding, and I'm also wakeboarding, and I like country music, which is like, what are you doing in Lithuania, right?
Yeah. So you should be in Texas.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. What daily routines do you have, whether morning or evening, that have helped make you more successful?
I have morning routines. Those definitely contribute a lot to my success of the day. And I'll tell you one thing, actually, before I dive in explaining what those routines are. I actually established my routine after I felt miserable for a very long time, every single day, without really understanding why I'm feeling so miserable. And at some point, it hit me that every time if I am not learning something new, I feel like my day was wasted. And I don't know how, you know, how common or not common it is, but it was the case for me. So then I was like, okay, so I need to start reading. And I really struggled to put the reading somewhere in my routine. I tried in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening, and it was hard, you know, because you get into day to day and it's just busy. So then I realized that the most important things for me personally, not for the business, has to be done in the morning. So my morning routine is I wake up, you know, I have hot tea. I actually drink hot water, which is also weird, right? I just have like hot water, a cup of hot water. I meditate, I journal, then I spend some time reading. I exercise when I can. So I'm also doing exercises. And then I take my dog for a walk for an hour in the forest, which is like getting fresh light and like all of that, which actually helps me a lot. So this is my typical routine.
I think that's a great routine. Do you wake up consistently at the same time every day?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I try to wake up 6:45. That's my time. But again, it depends, you know. Yeah, sometimes it's like half six. Sometimes it's a bit later. It depends on the day. But typically, I try to wake up before 7.
Beautiful. What book or books changed your mindset or life?
Many of them. And I'll tell you that, you know, if you continue reading, every book can contribute to, you know, how your life is being perceived. The way, you know, working as a consultant, the book that really contributed to my life is basically all the books by Patrick Lencioni. I mentioned him already. I mentioned his business. So he has some great books about how to build functional teams, how to build healthy organizations. Those books were like mind-blowing for me because it's like very simple writing style, but very core information in there. And then also I recently read, what is it called? The Almanac of Neville, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Neville Ravikant, something like that. Mm-hmm. So this one was also Naval, like a brilliant book.
Naval Ravikant, yeah.
Naval, yes, that's the one. So the Almanac of Naval Ravikant, very great book, like really recommend to anyone. It's easy read and you can read any part of the book, but it's a wisdom in one place.
Nice, I like that. And but I mean, obviously the Patrick Lencioni is lots of books, but brand new recommendations. Yeah. We love that on the show. When we get brand new ones. Naval Ravikant, he's a smart guy. So that's definitely one worth checking out as well. What's the most exciting question you spend your time thinking about?
The most exciting question?
Or exciting question, if you prefer.
What's next?
What's next? What is next? What do you see further down the line?
Further down the line, I see that, I never know how it's going to turn out, and I'm okay not knowing. I just know that I have to continue doing what I do. So what's next is something bigger, for sure. It's always bigger, and it's always bigger because, you know, if you don't stop learning, you're going to grow bigger. So what's next? Something bigger.
Nice. What advice would you give your younger self?
Read more.
Makes sense. So in terms of reading, like you're an efficient person and so on. Have you deployed any kind of tactics to either absorb more information or to consume faster or to like certain sort of optimal places to read? Like how do you approach your reading so that it actually works?
Yeah. So first of all, for it to work, you just have to do it. So for you to do it, you have to find the time. For me, it's morning. So that's when I dedicate time, and I'm not negotiating with myself here. I read every day in the morning. So that's one thing. In terms of what works best, I mean, there are many different tactics. You can, you can do audiobooks, you can read paper books, you can read on Kindle. There's an app called Speechify. And I used it for a while because I really needed to develop my reading skill. And on Speechify, you can upload a PDF of the book and they actually read it for you. So it's kind of stimulating your visual and your audio in a way. Mm. So it's really good and it helps you to read faster because you can choose the speed. But now I'm a huge fan of paper books. And I just feel like, you know, the more I read, the faster I read. So it's like speed reading.
Definitely. I've tried them all as well myself, and actually I don't know what it is, but it's like the holding the physical book in your hand. I don't mind audio books because you can do those at times, like walking the dog, for example. But
yeah,
the actual, there's nothing seems to beat the actual holding of a book there. So I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, I'm also testing reading a couple of books at the same time. So I'm reading, for example, at this moment, I'm reading another book by Patrick Lencioni, and he writes the books in like a story style, which is very easy to read. And then reading another one about leadership by John Maxwell. So this one is a bit more tough. But those are very different books, because one is like pure theory, another one is like a story. So I'm trying to see how those two get along. Like, so far it's going great.
Nice. So you can sort of get the average is an easier or an easy consumption as opposed to a hard one. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
What was the biggest challenge starting a business for you, and how did you overcome it?
I think it's more about confidence. It's just getting enough confidence and trusting that it's all going to be okay. So that's a big challenge, but really I'm not saying that I'm already there 100%, like I'm 100% confident and 100% trust the future. But you know, it's a progress you make every day. When you feel, when you face a challenge, you just tell yourself everything is going to be okay, because it always is going to be okay, and it always turns out to be okay. I think that's the biggest challenge for everyone, is just having enough confidence.
So you dig deep and you find that discipline in the moment to say, do you want, this is going to be okay, because everything is always okay historically.
Yeah. And I'm also a big believer that if you really want to achieve great things in life, you just have to be consistent. So even when I feel like I'm going to give up, I'm like, okay, but I'm just going to do this one thing today and I'll see where it goes. And usually, you know, you do one day, another day, third day, and I'm like, oh, everything is great now. So let's continue. Yeah. But just consistency is important.
What unusual or underrated food or drink should more people try out?
Underrated food or drink? Oh, ginger shots, 100%. I mean, I feel like it's underrated. By the way, I recently heard that when you have a headache, just take a ginger powder. Apparently that works like better than ibuprofen, which is pretty cool. So yeah, 100% try ginger shots. I do myself lemon, ginger, cayenne pepper and honey and some water. Great start of the day. Probiotics in liquid form definitely is a great thing to do, because you really need to take care of your gut, because that's your like a second brain. And then, yeah, I mean, I will say take meditation, because it's a food for your brain. Spend some time with yourself.
Nice. And then final question, Erica, what makes you happiest?
Health. When I'm healthy and my family is healthy, I'm the happiest. Everything else is just like my passion. But the true happiness comes from your health, and that's like the most important thing.
And how do you determine whether you're feeling healthy? Is it just I feel healthy, or is there other ways that you know whether you're healthy or not?
I mean, when I say health, I'm not talking just about physical health. It's also mental, emotional, spiritual health. You always have to balance, and you usually feel which one needs more attention. I just recommend, as I said, you know, try to spend some time meditating, journaling, because that helps you identify whether or not you feel healthy in those areas. And.
Nice. Fantastic answer to top off the question round. So that pretty much brings us to the end of the show. What I'd like to ask you is, do you have any asks or requests of the audience listening today?
Asks or requests? Good one. I actually just want to encourage people to not be afraid to also get in touch with me. Networking is always the best thing you can do, as well as reading, right? So don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to, you know, just start the conversation. And just continue being healthy and invest time in yourself, because that's also important.
Beautiful. Well, Erica, that brings us to the end of the show. Guys and girls listening, theprasanna.com is the website, or find Erica on LinkedIn, Facebook, and all of the rest of the places. The details will be in the show notes. But for today, Erica, thank you so much for coming in and actually talking about an area of the business that actually doesn't get a lot or enough attention sometimes. If I had a pound for every email marketing agency that wanted to talk to me on this show, right? Like, but there isn't many people like you who are actually pushing the on the operations side and the culture and the building the efficiencies in the team. And it's so important. And actually, it's an area that is underserved, particularly in small startups. whereby the options out there are designed for conglomerates and priced like that as well, right? So it's phenomenal that you've come in and you've seen this area, and you can apply your neuroscience to your teachings as well. There, it's been a fascinating interview. It's been super interesting. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for having me here. Always a pleasure. And looking forward to be here next time.
Hey there, you incredibly good-looking human. Thanks so much for listening. If you had a good time today and would like more good times in the future, please hit that subscribe button and leave a heartwarming review. I read them all, and it will go a long way to help others out there benefit from all the teachings of this show. And if you want to get in touch or otherwise learn more about me, head to martincook.co.uk or smarterdestiny.com. I really appreciate you. You're an incredible human. Until next time, keep crushing.